This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, David Culley met with the media on Saturday. He was asked by our Landry Locker, what's your thought, what's your philosophy on rookies getting on the field early, knowing full well that the philosophy of the previous head coach was seemingly a bit anti-rookie. Here was David Culley on rookies.
Coach Culley, I have a football question and a non-football question. The football question, there are some coaches who kind of already, the rookies are fighting an uphill battle because they feel they might not know anything and it's hard for them to get on the field. What's your philosophy on rookies playing early?
Well, here's the thing is if a rookie progresses the way he needs to progress and if he's a good enough player and picks it up, picks the offense up or the defense up or what we're doing on special teams, you know, we're about competition here. And regardless of whether he's a rookie or he's a veteran, if he picks up what we're doing, he's doing the things that we want done. I've seen rookies through my career throughout this league that people felt like didn't have a chance, end up playing right away. I've seen some rookies that people thought would play right away that played later. It's just a matter of the individual being able to come in and pick up the system and learn what we're doing. And if he's good enough to do it with the competition, then he's good enough to do it.
All right, so that was a much different answer than I think Bill O'Brien would have given, Seth, the bottom line. If I'm a rookie in this rookie class, then I'm going into these activities with a much higher level of confidence and I feel like I can do something to contribute to this team than when O'Brien basically told the rookies to, you know, he may as well have told them they're taking a redshirt year last year before the season started, honestly, with the way he was explaining how little impact they could have.
Well, look at what they did. They traded for Brandon Cooks. And after one of the justifications for the DeAndre Hopkins trade was that, hey, you can get an awesome receiver in the second round these days. Then when they realized that COVID was going to be an issue, they decided, well, abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Let's go get a veteran wide receiver. And they used that second round pick. They traded a second round pick for Brandon Cooks, and they used another one on a defensive lineman who barely played at all. Yeah, I'm not concerned that David Culley won't play rookies as much, or that he won't play him like to the same degree that Bill O'Brien did, because Bill O'Brien was an extreme case. He had some kind of a psychological block when it came to recognizing the contributions that rookies could give you. And you're right. I think that sometimes it seemed like it was his desire to have things perfect and to build this masterpiece of an offense, you know, with all these option routes and all of these checks at the line of scrimmage and what have you, that over the years ended up doing more harm than good because he just couldn't accept when things weren't done up to the standards that he wanted. Like there's a certain time where sometimes you just got to go with what works, you know? And sometimes a guy who's more capable physically as a rookie, even if he can't handle the mental complexities of the game, he's still better to have on the field than the old veteran who's washed up but knows what to do.
Here is David Culley. He talked about some of the rookies specifically. And Seth, let me preface this. These are just cuts on the rookies. I watched the press conference, and this is another thing. And I hate to keep making it about Bill O'Brien, but this is a new head coach. And so it's natural for us to compare, okay, how is David Culley handling things versus what we've become accustomed to for the last six-plus seasons? What's going to be different? And right now, all we have to compare is media interaction. We don't have any games or any schemes or anything we can compare to. And this is another point in the press conference. This was the very beginning. I think it was Brandon Scott who asked the question, hey, can you just give us a thumbnail assessment of each of the rookies? And Cully's like, all right, let's do them one at a time. Let's go. You fire away, Brandon, and you give them to me one at a time. And then ultimately it turned into Cully just kind of freestyling on each of them. But I would say effusive praise was the tone of the day, at least. Here's David Cully on rookie quarterback Davis Mills after a couple rookie minicamp practices.
I thought our Nick's staff did a great job of all of a sudden earmarking a guy that fit what a quarterback in this NFL is all about. I mean, this guy, obviously he didn't play as much football as some of the other guys because of the COVID situation in the Pac-12, but we really love what he's all about. We love all the intangibles that he has. He's a prototype NFL quarterback, and we feel good to have him. He's smart. He can make all the throws, and we feel good and feel fortunate that we were able to get him when we got him.
We need a table bump-o-meter when David Culley's giving answers. Do you hear that table bumping? He does a lot of table, hitting the hand on the table.
In the Zoom era, I've noticed that a lot. You can really tell who the emphatic speakers are because it just the Zoom picks up the table bumps for whatever reason. O'Brien used to twiddle his thumbs on the podium. Remember? Or was that Kubiak? I think Kubiak used to kind of like thumb his thumbs on the desk.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think it was O'Brien.
It would annoy me. Yeah. As I hear more and more David Culley, I think of two people who are extremely positive to the point where it's notable because they're so much more positive than the classic NFL football coach. One, a man by the name of Pete Carroll.
Indeed.
Some players at times have thought that he's a little too over the top. He's so positive. They're like, come on. It feels phony almost. Another notably positive football coach, to the point where people just couldn't believe what a breath of fresh air it was. Gus Bradley, who took Jacksonville by storm with his extreme positivity and also was awful, just horrendous as a football coach.
One of those worked out okay. The other one.
Yeah. It's not like the positivity is what makes you good or bad as a football coach. It's just a different way to crack a nut. Some guys do it with positivity. Some guys do it with badgering. There are multiple different ways to be a successful football coach. A lot of it comes down to, for me, in the NFL, it really has always been about attention to detail and your ability to get players to pay attention to detail. And some guys, lead a horse to water. Some guys beat the crap out of the horse to get him to water. There's no perfect way to do it. Culley obviously is a positive type of guy. It's just a matter of, okay, how is he going to work with his assistant coaches? And how is he going to motivate as a coach that really matters?
All right, here's another one, can you imagine in a million years this happening last year? This is a fifth-round pick you're about to hear David Culley talk about.
Brevin, oh, my goodness, let me tell you something. We feel like we got a steal with him, with where we got him. We felt like that guy probably would have been gone before the fifth round, but once we got to that point and he was there, I mean, it was a no-brainer with the ability that he has as far as being a prototype tight end in this business.
See, but if I'm Brevin Jordan, I hear that, and I got a little extra hop in my step. Now, you know what it is, Seth? I don't want to disappoint that guy.
Yeah. Well, you know what they've also set up, too, is that – I mean, do you have any illusions? Or I guess do I have any illusions about who is actually running the draft and, whether – I don't feel like David Culley was sitting there hoping that they got Brevin Jordan in the fifth round. I think this was Caserio and 100% Caserio making all the selections.
I like to picture David Culley literally standing on the table for Brevin Jordan.
Screaming for Brevin Jordan. Caserio
wanted a cornerback, and David Culley was like, I watched three Miami games last year. This Brevin Jordan, he is a Houston Texan. Brevin Jordan.
I feel like
smart, tough, selfish.
I feel like David Culley is kind of using Nick Caserio's talking points about these players. Now, But what it does set up is a good dynamic where the coach can be a player's coach, mm-hmm. and the GM is the GM. And that's where, I mean, I think for Kubiak and Rick Smith, it worked to a certain degree that Rick Smith was the GM, Rick was going to make the hard decisions, and Kubiak got to be a guy who had the players' backs, was a player's coach, was going to be – Kubiak was a lot tougher on guys than the public would realize,
yes.
because – but as a coach, not as a guy that's – you know, responsible for cutting you or responsible for saving your job. Kubiak was going to coach. Rick Smith was going to GM. And I think that's a little bit more of the dynamic we have here now, is that Cully's going to be the coach, but the Caserio's ultimately making the personnel decisions.
I'm glad you made that distinction, Seth, because I you know, look, we're not going to be behind the scenes watching Cully operate in the building, but I do feel like a big part of David Cully being hired was the fact that he carries that demeanor around with him all the time, that he's a pleasure to be around and that he's somebody you want to go to work for and whatnot. I'm glad you made that distinction with Kubiak, because anytime we would bring up back in the day when Kubiak was coaching here, when we in the media would bring up either on the air or privately with guys, mostly offensive players, because that's where Kubiak really had his hands in the clay. But guys like Joel Dreesen and David Anderson and other guys like that who played for Kubiak, we would bring up how easygoing Kubiak was. You're like, You've never been in film with him when you mess up. Like, Kubiak he'll destroy you, you know, in front of other people. I don't know that David Cully has that club in his bag.
He was just, and maybe he does, I don't know. The thing about Kubiak was he was never doing it in a personal manner.
Yeah.
Like, the old, one of my favorite coaches of all time was Frank Gantz Sr., who is an old Naval Academy guy. He was he's a veteran, and then he coached football for probably 40 or 50 years, but he was as hard ass as they were, but also one of the more beloved coaches because he would always make a point of, I'm attacking the problem, not attacking the person. I'm not attacking you. We've got the same goal. I'm attacking the problem. And so he would coach guys really, really hard, but he was always attacking the problem. And that's where I think that's what Kubiak was. Kubiak was going to attack a problem. He wasn't going to personally berate you or, you know, try to make you feel like you're a dog bleep or anything. He was gonna attack a problem when there's a problem to be attacked. Cully, I guess Cully's just such a mystery. I don't know. Maybe it works out.
I'm intrigued.
Even the people that say really nice things about him usually just talk about what a great guy he is. They don't talk about how he made them a better receiver or anything.
No, I have yet to hear a single like coaching developmental reason why he should be one of 32 NFL head coaches. I hear a ton of interpersonal reasons why he's a great guy to be around and why he's going to bring a certain attitude and a positivity to the team. I just wonder, Seth, if they start out the season 2-7, like, where's the point where is there a breaking point for David Cully? Like, do we ever see an unhappy David Cully, like, openly unhappy, like an O'Brien level contentiousness from David Cully? Like,
what's the most contentious we've seen Dusty Baker? Now, Dusty Baker obviously is in a whole different realm than David Cully. I mean, Dusty
I'll answer
Baker's
that for you. Anything
forever.
Chandler Rome asks that's negative.
I know. I'm just trying to think of it.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, like, remember the question that Chandler had asked? It really wasn't even all that negative.
Right.
That's still one of the more puzzling things was, I've listened to a bunch of press conferences with the Astros, and it never seems like Chandler's overtly negative. I think sometimes he's asking critical questions.
Yeah.
Especially last year during the regular season, there were a lot of things not going that well at various times.
They were 29 and 31.
So do you think we get even that level of I think
Cully will get chippy at some point. You know, if we question a game management decision, if there's follow-up questions to a question he feels like has been answered already, I think it's human nature. I'm not saying he's going to be mean or get personal or anything like that, but I think everybody's got a breaking point. And let's face it, this is going to be a season that tests that.
Dude, I'll tell you what, if Cully they want to work with him on this next, because he did a pretty good job with the no comment on the Deshaun Watson stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know why more coaches aren't doing this. The easiest way out with a lot of coaching decisions these days is just to cite the analytics and say, you know, like, in a lot of times, the stuff that the wannabe analytics bros are raging about with in-game decisions, usually it's a matter of, well, if the coach had done this, then it would have given him a 1.3% greater chance of winning. Okay. It's not like it's slam dunk. Yeah, this is the. So all you have to do is cite the analytics and say, and then given that situation, you know, I understand that the math said that we should have gone for it, but here's what counteracted that. We had injuries. We were banged up. this play wasn't working, what have you, and they'll leave you alone. So I would advise them to work on, have the analytics bros work with him on that a little bit, and then we'll never see a cranky David Culley.
Let's hear from David Culley next segment on Deshaun Watson, and also get you the latest straight scoop on what exactly is going on with Deshaun Watson and his legal situation. That's next. All right, getting up to speed on Deshaun Watson, let's first hear from David Culley and see how he does with his Deshaun Watson sidestepping of question here. This was on Saturday. David Culley was asked, will Deshaun Watson be showing up for any of these activities anytime soon?
We have nothing to say about that situation at this time. Kyle and ownership a few weeks back indicated about how our organization feels about the situation. I think when Nick was on not long ago, we mentioned that he also mentioned that the legal process is in effect right now, and we're gonna respect that and gonna go from there.
But do you expect to see him this offseason at all? Like, regardless of the legal issues?
I have nothing to say about that at this time.
Sarah Barshop with the those were nice words. But the question was, do you expect him to show up anytime soon?
We have nothing to say. It was a polite way to give a no comment. I think that's the hardest thing that Culley, who hasn't had a whole lot of time spent in a press conference environment, is going to be like, at some point there's really no polite and friendly way to give a no comment. You just got to get firm. You know, it's like you're babysitting somebody's kids, and not even for money. You're just watching their kids. And at some point, you're trying to just like, all right, I'm just trying to bide my time until the parents get back. But then it gets out of control, and you got to be firm. That's what he's going to have to do.
This situation, Seth, with Deshaun legally, should actually be easier for David Culley to handle than the will he be traded, won't he be traded, is he a Houston Texan. For somebody who's, look, even at age 65, he's a novice at handling NFL press conferences. He's never been a coordinator before. He's not somebody who regularly, weekly met with me. Hell, Tim Kelly has probably done more press conferences in his 3 years as the offensive coordinator than David Kelly's done in the last 20 years, because at least he did one every week. So in some ways, in terms of just... In terms of starting a media brush fire, you can say no comment to this legal stuff, because that's the smart thing to say when it comes to legalities. Nobody's gonna read into David Culley saying no comment about a situation where Deshaun Watson is being sued by 22 women. And what does that all mean? So it's easy now to sidestep anything with Deshaun with no comment because of the lawsuits. When it was just, is Deshaun mad at the team? Does he want to be traded? Yeah, he wants to be traded, but the team doesn't want to trade him. Hell, the team is insisting that he's still a Houston Texan, and that's what the head coach is saying. If he were all of a sudden start no commenting things about the trade, then, oh my God, everybody would be reading all into that all kinds of ways.
Well, I guess the next step will be, as we get to training camp, you know, all right, are you – who's getting the reps? Who's your starting quarterback? You know, is Tyra Taylor your backup quarterback or your starting quarterback? Because he's taking all these reps. And I guess that'll just still have to continue to be some version. I mean, it can be some version of no comment until all of a sudden there will be a week one where Deshaun Watson is not there and you're going to have a starting quarterback who's not Deshaun Watson.
Or, Seth, even just June 15th when mandatory minicamp begins. Look, the fact that Deshaun's being sued by 22 different women does not preclude him needing to show up by the letter of the law. Show up for mandatory minicamp. It's mandatory minicamp, and especially if Deshaun is denying that he did any of these things, then he should be showing up at mandatory minicamp. You know what I mean?
I guess, yeah, and that's where I guess the message to your team matters too, because you got to talk to this. You got to talk to the your players about this when they all show up.
Yeah,
that's where it gets really uncomfortable. The closer you get to the actual regular season, because You can try to sidestep things as much as possible, but at some point, Tyrod Taylor is likely going to be starting for this team, and you'd like people to be able to look at him as the starting quarterback, but without it being addressed head on, he's just the guy, until you're waiting for Deshaun to return or what have you. So I don't, you know, so then you address it with the team, and then there's leaks always inevitably. So they'll have to address it head on at some point. But it's still going to be with as much of a no comment as possible.
If you were a veteran on this team, Seth, what would your question be for David Culley? If you're standing there at practice with David Culley and you're talking to him privately for a moment, what would you ask him about this? What would you want to know?
That's a really good question. I personally, I don't think I'd say anything. I would just kind of, you know, leave it unsaid. But there are going to be at least a couple guys. They'll be like, so, Coach, what's up?
Yeah.
And they might do it loudly in front of others, you know. Because they just don't – they got no filter. Some guys got no filter.
And Seth, they probably watched some of his press conferences, and they realize if they ask a question, there's a decent chance they're getting an honest answer out of David Culley.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think that kind of like it is with holdouts, there is that – this is obviously a much different situation than a holdout. But when there's a holdout, the way coaches usually address it is, hey, these are the things that happen in professional football, and sometimes guys are available and sometimes they're not. This is obviously way more complex and way more loaded of a situation, but there are absences all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where holdouts never really – I never understood why holdouts are so effective. I mean, management and coaches freak the hell out about it. I don't know why. Because guys tear their ACLs all the time and nobody freaks out about it. Nobody acts like, oh my God, we gotta do something. Like, no, they're gone and you roll on without it. Or a guy injures an MCL and he's gonna be gone for 6 weeks, and then you roll on. It doesn't have to be a huge distraction until you decide to acknowledge that it's a huge distraction.
I wonder how many of the guys on this team are talking to Deshaun on a regular basis, if at all, right now, Seth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like how many guys are talking to him? How much is Deshaun even divulging? I think there's – it's a lot easier to keep secrets from the media at large than people would realize. A lot of times with trade talks and rumors like that, those are leaked for a reason by an agent or by a coach or what have you. When it comes to a player genuinely wanting to keep something quiet or keep it a secret, I mean, look, J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt kept the entire Arizona Cardinals possibility a secret.
Yes.
Even though six or seven of his closest buddies knew it, and obviously several other people. Now, that wasn't as intense a situation as Deshaun.
And he only had to do it for 3 days.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So I think that probably I'm guessing amongst his closer friends on the team. I mean, how many close friends does he still have on the team?
That was my follow-up question to you, Seth, is do we even know who's left with this team? They've turned over damn near the whole roster. It feels that way. Lee, I know there's still some guys left, but David Culley said it like three times in his press conference. He called it a brand-new team. He said, this is a brand-new team.
Even just on offense, you would look at, okay, Nick Martin's gone.
Yeah.
Brandon Cooks came in, you know, as an Easterby guy, and I'm guessing there's a certain amount of suspicion when you talk to a guy like Brandon Cooks. Not that Deshaun would think he's a bad guy or anything, but there's going to be that natural reservation. Randall Cobb, new guy. Tunsil's been here a couple years, and I feel like Tunsil could keep his mouth shut.
Yeah.
I mean, Tunsil seems like the kind of guy that whichever conversations Deshaun has with him, it's staying quiet.
Yep.
But outside of that, where are you looking?
You know what I want to go find,
Seth? Jordan Akins, I suppose?
I want to go find the picture of Deshaun's opening to his Lefty's cheesesteak place and see which teammates were with him there. And I'm going to assume that those are guys who are kind of on an inner circle of some sort with him. But who knows? Who knows? So many new guys.
One thing I noticed in those Lefty's cheesesteak is one thing these damn sweatpants these days, Sean, they're not built for athletically built guys because you have big legs to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You look like you're wearing pantaloons or something by the time you have these things that are cuffed at the ankles and then they're big and billowy around the thighs.
Yeah.
It's making a lot of football players look really stupid, okay?
I got to go look at this now.
Time for – I'm talking to you, fashion people, of which I know we have many listeners that are high up in the fashion industry.
Yeah,
it's enough already.
That's our target demo for
sure. I'm tired of walking around looking like a satyr with my damn stupid sweatpants on.
8713.
And I remember, so I remember at least one of them was a running back, because running backs have the goofiest of all bodies.
Yeah, I think Duke Johnson was there for it.
For being chiseled from stone, poor running backs have it the roughest when it comes to wearing clothes because their legs are so big.
Yeah.
They tend to be shorter guys
tree trunks.
Comparatively, but with huge tree trunk legs.
Yep.
So stuff just doesn't fit them well.
We are at the quarter mark of the MLB season. We're 41 games into the Astros season. All right, so a couple months from now, we're going to have an All-Star game. How many Astros are on track for a consideration right now of getting to the All-Star game? We will run through that next. All right, so we are a quarter of the way through the baseball season, a little over. 41 games, 162-game season, 24-17. Seth, the crazy thing is that we would be over two-thirds of the way through the season if this were last year. 60 games. I didn't realize in real time just how crazy scrunched up that season was last year because we were just so happy to have baseball in our lives. You know what I mean? We didn't realize that it was a 60-game sprint. We didn't realize, yeah. Seth, that it was a built-in small sample size.
Well, we were happy that there was baseball, but we were kind of in despair that the Astros weren't looking as good as, yeah. Well, now they started off, they started off well enough because, I'm trying to think, there were five games over 500 at one point mm-hmm. in that season before things got a little dicier. But in the Astros are, how many games over 500 are they right this moment? Is it six?
Seven.
Six games?
Seven
over. Oh, yeah. Seven over
six games, 500. Six wins in a row, seven games over 500.
So they're seven games over 500. They're a half game back from the A's who, look at that. They're playing the A's now. So this is going to be, this will be a fun quarter way through the season, little mini series here for that really, really matters.
Yeah.
So for anybody that last year wanted to say based on 40 to 60 games that the Astros were no good without cheating, then those same people would have to concede right now. Like, oh, okay. Well, based on the same sample size, the Astros are awesome and they're the best. They're the best team that's ever lived.
The good news is that they are on pace for 95 wins, which last I checked is over 87.5. That is what
right.
I care about.
Well, and that's where, you know, without getting too deep into the gambling, it seemed like the public was really influencing the lines early on because, like, all the computer models would say that the Astros should win 93, 94, 95 games or so, and yet Vegas was saying 89 because a lot of people out there, a lot of dullards still think that the Astros were cheating, apparently on even until last year because they made it to the ALCS, so they must have been cheating last year too.
I think two things, Seth. I think one, there are people out there who still think they're cheating, and those people are dullards. Number two, there will be people who bet on teams to go under just so they've got an additional reason to root for it. You know what I mean? It's a bit of a sickness.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But there will be people who go like, you know what? I hate the Astros. I'm going to bet the under. That way, when they go under, not only do I have personal satisfaction, but I also win $150 or something like that. Like, that's a real thing, is people using futures bets as a way to give you a little additional juice, you know, a little additional oomph.
People back in the day did that with, like the Titanic or something. I'm betting now, like they shorted the
that's
Titanic.
Pretty morbid.
Somebody, yeah, I know. As you're telling me, I'm not the bastard who did it. I'm not the guy who shorted the Titanic.
You never would.
No. So all these people, all these Dodgers fans who, you know, trained their kids to try to throw at mannequins' heads, pretending that they were Jose Altuve and whatnot.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of people that drove that line
bad
down,
people.
I see.
Bad people. All right, so, Seth, so we're at the quarter mark. We're going to get an All-Star game this year. It's in Colorado. How many Astros? I was thinking about this watching the game on Saturday night. Amy and I were out watching the game at a local establishment near where we live. And kind of watching who the guys were that were stepping up. It was watching Ryan Presley pitch the ninth inning that made me think, damn, Presley could make the All-Star team this year. Presley's been really good. How many Astros would be under serious consideration if the All-Star game were 2 weeks from today instead of 2 months from right about now? Who would be under consideration for the All-Star game? And I think I came up with six names that I think have got a really good shot of getting there.
Okay.
Would you like me to share them with you?
I guess so. Am I supposed to? I'll guess him. I mean, look, Yordan, who,
ding.
If you're, what's that?
I dinged. Yes, Yordan's one of them.
I mean, yeah. Jordan's got the second best batting average in the league right now.
Hell yeah.
He's 348. He's not just power, kids. He's so much more than just that. If you go to OPS, Jordan and his running mate and fellow Cuban American, who will also be on your list of potential all-stars, Jordan's 12th in OPS and Yuli is 13th. Oh, but that's all of baseball. Sorry, let me go to the AL. Yeah. So when it comes to the AL, Jordan's 7th in OPS.
Yep.
And where is Yuli? Oh, Yuli's 8th in OPS.
Yuli's 8th, yeah. Yuli's one of them as well. So Jordan and Yuli, I have both of them in there right now.
Is Bregman going to make the AL All-Stars? Jose Ramirez, Rafael Devers, those are the other three third basemen, I suppose. That might okay, yeah. So I think Bregman makes it.
Bregman is one of mine, and I'm not saying they're definitely going to make it, but like potential. He's got a good puncher's chance at getting in there.
Yeah.
All right, so I have one more everyday player.
One more everyday player.
Yes, as opposed to a pitcher. So you got Jordan, Yuli, Bregman.
I can't believe you've turned around this quickly on Kyle Tucker. But okay, Sean. I guess that's if that's what you're telling me. What are you talking about, Sean?
Yeah, it's not Kyle Tucker. He's been very good lately.
I feel like Jose Altuve is going to get the soft boycott, though. Altuve is back over 300. By the way, everybody,
yeah.
If you've been paying attention, he's back over 300. He's 12 and 27th in OPS right now. I think Altuve's got a real good shot at it.
That he may. He may be a victim of a boycott, but he should be under consideration, serious consideration, for the All-Star team right now. Here's what I'm looking forward to, Seth. I'm looking for the voting. Looking forward to the first round of All-Star ballots coming out.
Yeah.
Because it'll be interesting to see if people have gotten over the Astros stuff yet when it comes to voting for the All-Star team. You know, we know that Jose Altuve was always a guy who, prior to the sign stealing, was always among the league leaders in not just at second base, but overall votes. He was a wildly popular baseball player. Jordan, you know, they do vote for a DH in the American League for the All-Star team. And I guess that would be my concern if there's a boycott of the Astros, which would be so stupid if Jordan got caught up in that because he wasn't even on the team in 2017. But my fear would be that they'd vote some other schlub into the All-Star game and that whoever's running the thing is not going to take two DHs to the All-Star
team. Well, what I would worry about is honestly, like Vlad Guerrero Jr. has a good case as a DH.
Yeah.
But Otani gets... How is it determined now? What percentage is fan vote? Is it still
not
all?
Sure.
Is it still 100% fan vote?
It's a good
vote,
question. You know what to do for today? Look up how.
I mean, Otani's
going to
get.
Team.
Otani is such a megastar in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're saying? Well, you can vote online. That you can do. So
does he go in as a DH or as a pitcher or both?
I don't know, man. That's an interesting case study. He could get voted in. I don't know. I'm not sure. But Otani and they're going to want him in that game too. You know what I mean? Major League Baseball is going to want him in that game. All right, so I've got those. The four everyday players I think should be under consideration. Jordan, Yuli, Bregman, Altuve. Brantley is a borderline case. I mean, he's hitting like .297. He's Uncle Mike. He's just super solid. He made the All-Star team back in 2019 or 2018, one of those years, maybe both, for the Astros. There's just a lot of good outfielders is the problem. And he's been steady and solid this year, but not spectacular. Two pitchers I think should be under consideration, Seth. Ryan Presley, I just gave away that one. But one of the starting pitchers I think should be under serious consideration for the All-Star team. Who do you think it is?
One of the pitchers?
One of the starting pitchers for the Astros.
Well, it's not going to be... Are you just thinking it's not Lance?
Yeah, it's Lance, man. Lance has been solid this year. He's been good. He's leading the team in ERA.
Solid, but his number, okay.
But I think he's under consideration. I'm not saying he makes it.
Under consideration. Yeah. How much longer for voting?
Well, pitchers get selected. The All-Star game is in the middle of July, so they usually solidify the team like end of June, early July. So Lance will get, another six starts before that? And he's been, I mean, since he had the...
No. Yeah, I'm not saying that he hasn't been crushing it as of late, especially. I'm just curious. This is the fault with baseball and basketball All-Star voting is that it's just so early in the year.
Yeah. But consideration is so I've got those six. If you think I should be adding, someone asked, what about Brantley? I just think Brantley's been pretty solid this year. I just don't think he's been all-star level this year. But we'll see. We'll see what the voters have to say about that.
DeGrom is sitting there at a .68 ERA.
Yeah, he's good at baseball.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
Trevor
Bauer, unfortunately, is also
Is he still good at baseball, too?
Trevor Bauer is sitting on a 2.20 ERA with a 0.75 whip.
Yeah. I know it probably curdles your stomach to have to quote such rudimentary stats like ERA and whip.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want me to go to Baseball Savant?
Not really.
Oh, hell yeah.
Not really.
Want me to go to Baseball Savant?
I'm just trying.
Oh, that sounded like you were totally asking.
I actually don't. I'm just trying to
empathize. I bet you do, though, don't you?
No. Please, no. Text message. Sean, what would you put the Texans' win-loss over-under if Deshaun Watson were at QB? All right, that's a good question, Texter. How many wins is Deshaun Watson worth to a team's total? I think his wins above replacement last year was... I think his wins above replacement was higher than the actual number of wins the Texans got on the season. I think his WAR was like 5.2, and they were a 4-12 football team, if you want an idea of how bad the roster was around him last year. So without Deshaun Watson, they would have won -1 games last year. I would put... In a 17-game season, I would put the total for wins and losses under Deshaun Watson. Boy, considering, Seth, that the quarterbacks that they play this year are not a great slew of quarterbacks, I'd put it at 7.5, I think. 7.5, 8, somewhere around 500, slightly below 500. I mean, it's not other than Deshaun, it's not a great football team.
If Deshaun were
the starting quarterback for 17 games, what would the number, what would you predict their record for?
Would they have a better rushing attack this year than last year? I think even just with the addition of Pep Hamilton, they probably would.
Hard for it to be worse, right?
Yeah. Now, the absence of Will Fuller is a big deal. And even though you pointed out that they were putting up some numbers without Will Fuller, they might be a more complete offense this year. Last year, Deshaun won a bunch of games that the defense promptly lost for him immediately after Deshaun won the game. So I'd say it'd be fair to say they would win 7 games with Deshaun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about where I'd put the number. If I were running a sports book, I'd put it with Deshaun, I'd put it at 7, 7.5, somewhere in there. There's 4 or 5 games that are going to be started by rookies on the other side right now. You got a couple Carson Wentz games in there. With Deshaun Watson, you've got the advantage at quarterback in every game on the schedule, other than who, Seth? Maybe Russell Wilson. That's it. I mean,
yeah.
Josh Allen. There's not a lot of quarterbacks on the schedule where the Texans wouldn't have the advantage if Deshaun Watson were the quarterback. I found the list of guys who are at his cheesesteak franchise opening. Seth, if you and I were wondering in the previous segment, who is Deshaun's inner circle right now? Like, who are the guys on this team that he might be talking to? The guys that were at his cheesesteak franchise opening... Mm-hmm. Actually, there was one, two, because remember, it was a big deal. None of them were wearing masks. And so Deshaun had to pay like a $7,500 fine or something like that. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teammates there with Deshaun. Of those 6, 5 are still with the Texans, believe it or not. The only one that's not with the Texans anymore is Duke Johnson. But Brandon Cooks, so there's an answer to one of your questions. Clearly, Deshaun didn't see Brandon Cooks as enough of a potential rat to not invite him to his cheesesteak opening. Laramie Tunsil, Titus Howard, good job by Deshaun to be friends with both of the guys that protect both your blind and your front side. Roderick Johnson was there, and Charles Omenihu, who I believe is a fellow Mulugeta client, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's a big part
Austin
of it there.
Austin connection, yeah.
The one of the people on the text line calling you a clown for saying that Brantley's not all-star caliber, I figured, for one, his number of doubles is notable.
Okay.
I'm looking at his other All-Star seasons compared to this All-Star season to this season. Yeah. This would be closest to, I guess, in 2017, he hit 299.
Okay.
I'm sorry, 2017, he hit 299 with an OPS of 801. Right now, he's hitting 297 with an OPS of 809.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's having a nice year. This guy is texting in like it's Brantley's burner account. I mean, Brantley hasn't played like an all-star. GTFOH, you're not a baseball guy. SMFA. Okay, enough with the acronyms. You got like 6 acronyms in here.
Yeah, you're too old. You're too old to be using that many acronyms.
Yeah, I'm assuming, unless you're 12. You're not a baseball guy. Look at his average, clown, and how many doubles he's hit. WTF.
Yeah, he's hitting 297.
What That's you, fine. I said he's a borderline. I just said that I wouldn't put him on the All-Star team probably right now. I'll do a little research and see exactly who my outfielders would be, but settle down. He's got a couple months to... We're going to do a circle of trust tomorrow, and I'm going to promise you right now, Brantley's in the circle of trust. I don't know what else to tell you. I wouldn't have him on the All-Star team right now.
Well, maybe stop hating on Michael Brantley so much. How about that?
Who,
how about,
me?
How about you do that? Yeah, yeah. It's
whatever.
It's pretty clear you've got an agenda here.
You probably texted this
in. You've got an agenda,
in.
You media clown.
Number?
Yeah. What's that?
Is this your number? Are you telling you? Seth's on his phone texting the text line to agitate me. That's not a bad gimmick, actually. Somebody said the receiver that went to Miami was friends with Watson. His name is Will Fuller V. And he was friends with Deshaun, but he was not good enough friends to be at the maskless opening of Lefty's Cheesesteak franchise.
Yeah, but that's just a picture. That's a snapshot in time. We don't know exactly who else was there that day. Or maybe he was stepping back to be sure that they didn't have more than – because the NFL rule was – the NFL had a couple of weird rules. It was like you could – five guys could be standing around spooning each other, but once there were six guys in close proximity, then all of a sudden it's a potential outbreak. So there might have been a couple of guys standing off in the wings, you know, trying not to get into the picture.
I wonder how business is over at Lefty's through all this tribulation going on with Deshaun right now.
It's probably, I mean, it was a strong enough brand in, is it Chicago?
Detroit.
Detroit.
Yeah.
That I mean, the quality of the food and the brand is strong enough, then it might be doing fine just on its own.
Yeah, I've eaten there.
Deshaun's not doing a whole bunch of appearances to try to boost things.
I've eaten there a couple times. I'll say this. It hasn't been overly crowded when I've been there a couple times.
Yeah.
And location-wise, it's not like the greatest location in the world. You know, you want to be in a high-traffic area. They're parked like they're in a little strip mall next to the green lot over at NRG Stadium. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think whenever you go to your average sub shop from a successful chain in Houston, it's rarely packed.
Yeah, you're right.
Of course, I don't know. I go at weird hours, too, because I can. Because I'm lucky enough to have a job where I can go have my lunch at
eat subs.
Either 10:30 a.m. or 2 p.m. or whenever. Yeah.
It is
so
nice.
I specifically try to avoid the – yeah, like Jimmy John's is never busy, and they're successful, except you're there at 3:15 in the afternoon.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah. And you never know what DoorDash is doing for all these guys, Grubhub and stuff like that, Uber Eats. All right. There's a text. That guy needs to get a life. That's all it says. I'm going to assume that this texter is talking about the guy that's stumping for Michael Brantley. That's what I'm going to assume.
Yeah.
Seth, that music means we're done. Antibodies to you, my friend. I enjoyed it as always.
Antibodies and only the most qualified and the truest souls get to go to the All-Star game.
There you go.
That's my wish.
There you go. All right, we're done. In the Loop is up next. John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig. We will see y'all tomorrow at 6 a.m. Have a great day, everybody.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.